Welcome to Conscious Voices, a weekly program dedicated to bringing you alternative points of view to challenging popular assumptions in order to help you be better informed and civically engaged. Last week, we covered a press conference by a coalition of reproductive rights advocates who gathered over 700,000 signatures on a petition to place a constitutional amendment before the Ohio voters in November to guarantee a woman's right to choose an abortion and other reproductive health care services. But on August 8th, there will be a special election on another constitutional issue, Issue 1, which would raise the threshold number of signatures required in each of Ohio's 88 counties in order to place an initiative on the ballot, and which would then require a 60% or greater vote in order for a constitutional amendment to pass. Opponents, and that includes unions, former governors, environmental groups, concerned citizens, women's rights organizations, to name a few, say that the higher thresholds would make it virtually impossible for any future citizen-led initiative campaign to succeed. It would require such a monumental effort and such unprecedented funding to gather the required signatures that even if a group manages to get the issue on the ballot, its resources might be so depleted as to make it very difficult to campaign for its passage. Thus, in my view, Issue 1 is kind of like a poll tax or analogous to a poll tax when it comes to initiatives, and the 60% requirement amounts to a kind of filibuster. Folks have speculated, as you heard last week, that this special election is actually intended to prevent Ohioans from passing the reproductive rights bill. Well, is it? Here's a clip from a recent TV news report on what Secretary of State Frank LaRose has to say on the topic.
Has a battle over how Ohioans can have their voices heard been about abortion all along? This summer, Ohio voters will decide whether to pass Issue 1, which would require 60% voter approval for future constitutional amendments. But tonight, Columbus Bureau reporter Morgan Trow found out what the truth behind Issue 1 is in a story you'll see only on 5.
Advocates have argued that Issue 1, which would make it harder to amend the Ohio Constitution, is actually about trying to make it harder to legalize abortion. But on November 17, 2022, Secretary of State Frank LaRose said otherwise.
That's not what this kind of a change should ever be about.
Ohioans will likely get the choice this November of enshrining reproductive rights in law.
Why are you doing it now? Because it's ready now.
Every single time LaRose has been asked if Issue 1 was related to an abortion vote, he has denied it.
If this is about one specific issue, then somebody's not really focused on what we're trying to accomplish here.
But the words he said to reporters appear different than when he spoke to his supporters. Here's what he said just last month.
This is 100% about keeping a radical pro-abortion amendment out of our Constitution.
A video obtained by News 5 from Scanner Media shows the secretary at Lincoln Day in Seneca County with what advocates call saying the quiet part out loud.
It is utterly shameful that Secretary LaRose or anyone would work to take this freedom away from us for just one issue.
Jen Miller with the League of Women Voters explains that LaRose was the one who first put forward the idea of raising the threshold for a constitutional amendment to pass from a simple majority to 60%. This would change the way the Constitution has worked for more than 110 years.
This is again about corrupt politicians and special interest groups trying to trick everyday Ohio people into taking our own rights away.
LaRose has continuously denied that his idea is related to any specific policies. In the video, he adds that although it is about abortion now, it would be useful down the road to combat what he calls the left's dangerous plans.
The next thing they want to do is put a $15 an hour minimum wage in our state constitution. And who knows what's next? Marijuana.
We tried reaching out for days to talk to LaRose, but his team refused to answer our questions. They did give us a statement. Their spokesperson said, in part, we need to elevate the standard for amending our state constitution, whether it's health care, minimum wage, casinos, or any other special interest agenda. Issue 1 applies to an unlimited number of political issues. That's the point. But at the Lincoln Day event, this was the message.
This is 100% about keeping a radical pro-abortion amendment out of our constitution, and this is one of the ways that we can make sure that they're not successful.
The Secretary of State's office should be a nonpartisan position. And this just shows that politics are creeping into how Secretary LaRose runs his office, and that's disappointing.
Additionally, in the Seneca County video, the secretary says he hopes to have an announcement this summer to make about running for U.S. Senate. At the Ohio State House, I'm Morgan Trow reporting.
To help flesh out the history and the ramifications of Issue 1 and the constitutional amendment process in Ohio, we have audio from a recent broadcast, or podcast actually, here in Ohio, where the details are discussed quite thoroughly. That'll be followed by a couple of recent speeches by Issue 1 opponents.
Thank you, everyone, for being here this afternoon. I'm Carrie Burns. I'm the Chief Strategy Officer here at the Cleveland Metro Bar Association. Thank you for joining us today for an important discussion on Issue 1 and the August 8th election. It is a one-issue election with voters deciding whether to approve a 60% vote requirement to approve any future constitutional amendments. Early voting just opened yesterday. With us today, we have retired Cleveland Municipal Court Judge Ron Adrian and Jen Miller, Executive Director of the League of Women Voters, Ohio. We are going to take questions today. They will be at the end of the program, so please use the chat or the Q&A feature at the bottom of your screen, and we'll pull those questions and ask our presenters at the end of the formal presentation. This is not for CLE credit today. I'm just letting everyone know, you lawyers in the room. So there won't be any surveys or anything like any polling. We're just going to listen to our speakers and ask questions. We're going to start today with Judge Adrian. He is going to give us a brief history of the Ohio Constitution and how we came to this issue today. Judge Adrian, take it away.
Thank you. So good afternoon. Thanks, Carrie. I want to give you just a real brief overview of the Constitution as a constitutional provision that we're concerned about today, but to put it in its proper context. The provision that allows for initiative petitions was part of a much broader swath of reforms to the Ohio Constitution that were enacted back in 1912 at a convention. The convention was a pretty progressive group of folks. They did all kinds of things that we still have in place today, and I think have made our life better. They made amendments or a series of amendments to the Constitution as proposals, which were adopted by the people. 34 out of 42 of the proposals that they made actually made the final cut and were adopted. But they included things like expanding the state's Bill of Rights, providing for voter-led initiatives and referendum, as we're speaking about today, establishing civil service protections, and granted the governor a line item veto in appropriations bills. They also empowered the legislature to fix the hours of labor, establish minimum wage, and workers' compensation system, and addressed a number of other measures that have kicked in and have, as I said, I think made life in Ohio a lot better. One of the provisions that were put in place, which has been eroded in recent years, was the Home Rule Amendment for populations over 5,000 in the state. And as you know, that Home Rule Amendment gives local communities of some size the ability to actually take into consideration of the uniqueness of their situation and to pass laws that are not in conflict with the general state law. There was a lot of conservative opposition to these changes, but at the end of the day, as I said, out of 42 proposals, 34 actually passed. Some people are concerned about the Constitution today and are afraid that it's going to be overwhelmed by special interests. But really, if you look back at what has happened since 1912, what you find is that there have been very few constitutional amendments that have been proposed by way of initiative petition that have actually made the grade. As a matter of fact, it's something in the range of about 20-some percent. And if the constitutional provision is passed as it's currently situated, about another 14 or 15% of those that did pass would not pass. We'd have about a 10% passage rate. So this is a situation where you have to kind of scratch your head as you're trying to figure out why we need this at this particular point in time.
Thanks, Judge. And for a little bit more background, could you talk just briefly about the Ohio Constitution and how it differs from the U.S. Constitution, and that ours is updated a lot more often than you know, the federal Constitution?
You have to take into consideration that the Ohio Constitution and the U.S. Constitution had very different genesises and purposes. The U.S. Constitution was a document that was trying to make the federated government of the United States as it was constituted at the founding viable, and to get all of the 13 colonies on the same page so they would be willing to work together. And it specifically reserved to the states all the things that were not specifically put in place as far as the federal constitution was concerned. That's why you can see the difference in the size of the U.S. Constitution versus the size of the Ohio Constitution. You know, the U.S. Constitution you can carry around in your pocket. If you're talking about the Ohio Constitution, you better get a wagon because it goes to volumes. And because of that, it deals with a lot of nuts and bolts, specific things that are not contemplated by the federal constitution, but that is by design.
Thank you. And can we now back into how issue one and the August 8th election came to be? Why are we having this election on August 8th this year?
It is somewhat curious because a little bit more than 6 months ago, the legislature decided that August elections were a gross waste of time and money, that on balance, generally speaking, when elections were held in August, the people number of people who actually voted in those elections was severely small. Usually 20% or less of the populace shows up. This year, they're looking at somewhere in the range of 20% as being the target of what they expect to show up at the polls. But the legislature had concluded that given the cost of special elections in August, and given the fact that so few people actually participated in those special elections, that they should be abolished. And they actually passed law to abolish them, only to turn it right around and establish that they were going to have one more special election to put this item in front of the public and let the public pass on that. So again, the question has to be raised as to why this, why now, and what are we going to get as a result of that? I think there are a lot of people in the state of Ohio who currently have not only do not know what the issue is, and the issue is kind of obscure when you look at how it's put together, but also have no idea that there is actually even an election taking place in August. And as we all know, July and August are high vacation months. People have a whole lot of other things on their plate during July and August. Given the apathy that we've seen as it relates to voting generally, it's not untoward to think about the fact that there is a certain level of political calculation that went into setting this up in August. And there is There are other things that are coming down the pike by way of proposals that have not yet vested for constitutional amendment that I think that this particular proposal to change the way constitutional amendments are brought forward is there for the specific purpose of not only knocking out those things, but knocking out anything else down the line for years to come by way of initiative petition.
Thanks, Judge. Jen, can you walk us through the specifics of issue one?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that I think the judge really started to capture is that a lot of voters aren't going to understand this. So if they are to read the language, one of the challenges with the language on the ballot is that it doesn't actually, it lacks all context. And so when someone looks at the ballot language, they're not going to know what they're actually voting on necessarily, how that changes. So currently we have a simple majority for passing constitutional amendments that's been in place since 1912. So that's 50% plus one. This would mean that all amendments, whether they're proposed by citizen petitions or the General Assembly or constitutional conventions, would have to pass by 60% of the vote. It would also change the signature requirements, which are already very difficult, in which you have to get 10% of the votes in the last governor's election and 5% in 44 counties. This would keep that 10% of the votes in the last governor's election, but make that 5% in all 88 counties. And then finally, it would eliminate what we call the cure period, or it might be easier to call it a grace period, which is when citizen-initiated amendment campaigns come short of their signatures. And that can easily happen because people move, people pass away, people think that they've updated their registration and they haven't. There's all kinds of reasons that that occurs. And so we have two things kind of going on here. One is really losing our simple majority rule that we've had since 1912. This is the equivalent of, let's say, the Guardians get 6 runs and the Reds get 4 runs, but the Reds win. This ability for a minority of voters to override policy changes that the majority of Ohioans want. The other piece has to do, and that part would come into effect as early as the November election. So right now, if you think about, there's a choice amendment there, you know, that is being looked at, it's getting certified now to see if they have enough signatures. If that ends up on the ballot, that would have to pass by 60% rather than that simple majority of 50% plus one. The signature pieces also take effect immediately, but it wouldn't affect, you know, the choice amendment or other amendments that are already in that qualification stage. But that signature piece, it's already very, very hard to get enough signatures to get on the ballot. Getting rid of that cure period alone could make it impossible. Literally, a citizen's campaign, maybe something on money and politics or reforming bail or judicial rules, things like that, a campaign could come short one signature in one county, and that would mean that it would be dead in the water. So you could have millions of dollars spent on a signature campaign. You could have thousands of volunteers in the field all working to get signatures. And literally, because there would be no cure period or grace period, one signature short would mean that the campaign would be all for naught. We need to keep in mind, again, that constitutional amendments are very difficult to get on the ballot. They very rarely do. And they're also very difficult to pass. Since 1912, only about a quarter of constitutional amendments do pass. And so ultimately, what this will mean is that if issue one passes in August, it will mean that only very well-financed groups will be able to bring constitutional amendments to the people it will not mean citizen groups like the League, where we generally rely on volunteers and generally do not have deep pockets. This will make this process impossible for us. So we've been here before as your guest talking, for example, about redistricting reform. If issue one passes, redistricting would be much harder for us to achieve.
Thanks, Jen. And some of the, and Judge, do you have anything to add there?
Yeah, a couple of things. One, I'd like to go back to the issue as it relates to the signature requirement. You know, by making it so that all 88 counties have to provide 5% of the vote from the last gubernatorial election, it really complicates matters, because what it really does is it gives every county in the state a functional veto over anything that is up for election. So you got to figure that somebody who's doing the political calculus can go to the smallest county in Ohio and do some things to suppress the number of people who would vote, or not vote, but sign the petitions. And by doing that, what they would accomplish would be basically making it so that the people who are in the other 87 counties never even get a chance to take a look at the proposal. And the thing that's it's most troublesome about this is that if this passes, given the nature of its terms, if we find out a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, that this has been a terrible idea, it'll be almost impossible to undo.
What are some of the threats if we don't pass issue one? So the argument has been that these special interest groups, it's too easy for them to come in and, you know, take over our constitution and pass things. What, Jen, what are some of the arguments for issue one?
For issue one or against issue one?
Well, I'm just, so the whole point of issue one being was this, these special interest groups. Can you talk a little bit about the special interest group component?
Yeah, thank you. So this is really a red herring. This idea of special interest groups controlling our constitutional process is incredibly unfair. Again, first and foremost, Ohio voters are very judicious. They only approve about a quarter of constitutional amendments that come before them. But secondly, in 2015, Ohio voters did actually vote to protect the Ohio Constitution from special interests when we passed an amendment by 51% of the vote to prohibit monopolies, oligopolies and cartels from using the constitutional amendment process for their own special financial benefit. And finally, what I can say is it's already incredibly difficult and incredibly expensive to amend the Constitution. And the only folks that are going to be able to do it are actually deep-pocketed special interest groups. It will not be citizen groups like the League. That's why we've been calling this a special election for special interests. It's special interests who pushed the Ohio General Assembly to put this on the ballot in August, specifically a billionaire out of Illinois named Richard Uline, or Uline, I'm not sure how to say his name. But we are seeing still that it's special interests who are supporting this. On the other side, we have a couple hundred organizations who are opposed. I would call it a tripartisan movement of opposition, where we have Republicans, Democrats, and nonpartisan groups. So all former governors who are living Republican and Democrat, five attorneys general, the Honorable Maureen O'Connor, who just stepped down as Supreme Court Justice, as well as firefighters, police officers, nurses, teachers, faith leaders, and good government groups.
Judge, when we were on our prep call, we talked about how this is a movement, and Jen kind of alluded to it here, across the country, that these issues are popping up on other state ballots, and Ohio may be one of the first to do it, but may not be one of the last. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, there is a movement afoot in conservative think tank circles, that especially in states like Ohio, where There's one party that's in charge of virtually all of the other levers of government, that we would be in a position where all of the levers of government would basically be under those controls. So in Ohio, we have the triumvirate, where one party has the governor's chair, super majorities in both of the houses of the legislature, and a functional working majority on the Ohio Supreme Court that supports the other two. The last bastion of accountability, especially for the legislature, is the initiative petition provision of the Constitution. If that is basically gutted, then it means that the legislature could pass any manner of things that would not be in the best interest of the public, and the public would have no recourse. And so that in and of itself is something for us to be concerned about.
And so that was kind of the next thing in our outline, our implications for the future. And you just touched on some of them there, Judge. Jen, do you have anything to add to that?
I would like to talk about some of the, and we talk a lot more about the 60% than we do the signature piece to the general public. And that's because it's far easier to understand. But we are very concerned about the signature piece too. But let's just talk about some issues that we've passed here in Ohio that have not passed by a 60% threshold. Removing the term white male in the Ohio Constitution for voter eligibility in 1923, only passed by 56%. The 10 mil property tax would not have passed. Integrating the Ohio National Guard, first with people of color and then with women, those were both done in the mid-20th century. Neither of those passed by 60%. We had a wide range of statewide bond issues for highways, for Governor Taft's third frontier, the Clean Ohio Fund that cleans up brownfields, and all of these things passed by less than 60% of the vote, as well as the minimum wage amendment that we passed in 2006, low-cost housing loans, so many different things, including the casino gambling passed by 2009 in 2009 by 53% of the vote. And a lot of people point to that, but we need to remember again that in 2015, we passed an anti-monopoly amendment protecting our Constitution from those kinds of amendments in the future. And that only passed by 51.3% of the vote.
We had a relevant question come through the chat, so I'm going to ask it now. We were talking about other states, and someone asked, does the majority of states require more than 50% vote to amend their constitutions?
No. In fact, so it is true that only 18 states have citizen-initiated constitutional amendment processes. But first and foremost, I want to be the best Ohio we can be, and this has been part of our Ohio good government kind of strategies, kind of check on power, balance of power since 1912. But only one state, requires 60% threshold on everything, and that's Florida. There are a few others that have supermajority provisions, but the large majority of states that have citizen-initiated constitutional amendments just require a simple majority passage. And that's true for... And keep in mind that this would be also change, not just for citizen initiated, but even when I was talking about those statewide bond issues that would be put on by the legislature, a lot of people don't understand that those have to be constitutional amendments because we have a debt limit in the Ohio Constitution. When after the DeRolf decision where we built 1,200 schools, that was statewide bond issues, roads, bridges, technology investment, economic development, that is all done through statewide bonds as well. And that would be really unusual to have those passed by 60%.
Carrie, can I add to that?
Please.
You know, constitutions, by their very nature, are supposed to be a relatively permanent documents that set forth the fundamental values of the people who live in the state. That's why they're made so difficult to amend. And part of it also is that they're supposed to be living documents, so that when you do identify something that needs to be changed, you have the ability to make the change if enough people in the state believe that that's the case. I think that the fact that we have a constitutional amendment by initiative petition provision in our constitution makes us in the forefront of the states, and even in the forefront of the states that have the provision. You know, this is really one of our gems of self-government. And the fact that folks are really focusing on trying to take that away is really troublesome. I think we really need to get behind the question of why this and why now. And of course, as someone has pointed out earlier, you know, there is a rationale that can be put forward for trying to do this, but it's sort of like throwing the baby out with the bath. You know, people want to focus on things like reproductive rights and gun rights in order to get people ginned up to pass this thing. What they don't say is that, you know, after it's passed, any number of other really valid constitutional changes that need to be had will be impossible to get done by way of constitutional initiative, constitutional amendment. As it stands now, you know, I think we were saying that fewer than 20% or 25% actually get adopted. That means that 75% get rejected by the people. And the majority of the ones that get put forward are actually put forward by the legislature, you know, not by initiative petition. And yet and still the majority of those get rejected by the people. So the people are really chary about changing or tinkering with the Constitution. So it appears, and you know, I could have it wrong, but I don't think so. It appears that this is a solution that's trying to find a problem. Because the way this has worked for the last 111 years has been effective, and it has not been hijacked. There have been occasions, you know, people will point to the fact that we had three or four times when issue of legalized gambling was on for constitutional amendment before it passed. But you know, that's an outlier. And there usually are not those kind of monies put in to try to get this done. And when you really want to have the people step up to the curb and do what they need to do, this is almost impossible. As a matter of fact, I think that if this passes, it will be virtually impossible for you to have that, regardless of the amount of money that's put forward. I think even moneyed interests are going to have a difficult time to do that. As I said, with regard to initiative petitions over the course of the last 111 years, if the 60% requirement had been in place, only 10% of those initiatives would have passed. That means that 90% of the things that the people brought forward would be rejected under this construct. I don't think that that's what the people who wrote the 1912 amendment, our Constitution, had in mind. And I don't think that's what the majority of the people in Ohio have in mind either.
Thanks, Judge. I want to leave our final bullet point till the absolute end on what people can do. So I'm going to take a couple questions I've seen. A clarifying question about and it builds off of Jen, what you were saying about what Republicans have come out against this. And yeah, you said governors, attorneys general, both Democrat and Republican.
Yeah, so we all living former governors, Republican and Democrat. So on the Republican side, that's going to be Bob Taft and John Kasich. Betty Montgomery has come out against it, Maureen O'Connor. But also some of those groups within our coalition urging a no vote include unions that have very conservative members, including the FOP and quite a few of the construction trades.
Thank you. Another question we received, do we know how this election was funded and what the cost is going to be for this special election, Jen?
So there is a provision in the budget for, like in the state budget, to fund boards of elections. I don't think it's going to be enough. It's hard to know what turnout's going to be on something like this, where we've never had, literally in the history of the state, we have never had a special election with such a significant issue put before the people. And so it's hard to know how many people are going to turn out. Of course, there are some fixed costs, but a lot of it is based on turnout. And so what'll happen is if we go over the amount that was in the state budget, the boards of elections can actually work with Secretary LaRose to go back to the controlling board at, you know, and get the rest of it paid for. So I think it'll be $20 million or more, and that is taxpayer funded.
But I think that the point needs to be made that that's the $20 million that'll fund what the boards of elections have to do to put this election on. That does not speak to how much money is flowing into Ohio both for and against this issue and where that money is coming from. We made reference a little bit earlier to the fact that there was some gentleman from Illinois, for God's sake, who ponied up about $1 million at the very front of this effort. And that's really just the tip of the iceberg. We have heard that those people who are in favor of this issue also want to put together at least $6 million for purposes of advertising and public relations in order to try to get this across. I think that $6 million figure that we've heard is probably very conservative. I think there's a lot of dark money that's gonna come into this. It'll be interesting to see what the finance reports are at the end of the day. And that is not to say that there's not gonna be money coming in on the no side too from outside the state. And that being the case, I think that it's something for us to pay attention to.
So other than voting on August 8th, a question we got in the chat, is there any way to get out of the state special interest groups process altogether? I mean, it's who has the most money rules at this point? What is a good answer to that?
Well, the first answer is if this passes in August, it's harder to do that. The Ohio League would love to work with the General Assembly or a broad coalition to tighten transparency laws and to really start to address money in politics and special interests. But keep in mind that if this passes on August 8th, what that means is now signatures to deal with dark money, that gets harder, and the passage rate gets harder. And so first and foremost, we need to vote this down. And then we need to build a movement. There's never been an appetite in the Ohio State House to deal with special interests and dark money issues. We need to build a movement for that. And that's just part of a whole host of democracy reforms that we should be working on together. So independent redistricting, money in politics, voting rights, these are things that all of us should care about and are particularly difficult to move forward with our gerrymandered, lopsided General Assembly, as well as it's already hard through ballot initiatives. And if issue one passes in August, it will become impossible.
I think it also should be pointed out that the redistricting issue in particular is something that we should pay attention to. I mean, the people of the state of Ohio spoke loud and clear about the need for redistricting reform a couple of election cycles ago. And it was one of the few, petition initiatives which actually passed by more than 60% of the vote. So in the future, the problem would be that that initiative would not probably even get a chance to be seen by the people because it would be almost impossible to get it on the ballot in the first instance.
Okay, I'm slowing down a little bit to let people type in their last minute questions. Jen, are there, before we go to what you can do, I want to end with that. Any final thoughts that you want to get out before that you weren't able to earlier?
First off, we have something called the Mind Plus Nine, which is where you are going to check on nine of your friends and family members, make sure they know that there's an election, make sure they know their rights are on the line, and then not to be tricked into voting their rights away, and ask them to do the same. Second, I'm going to ask that we do not talk about this in terms of it being a partisan issue. There are lots of Republicans in the state house who are opposed to this, and there are even more Republicans throughout the state who are opposed to this issue. We do not want to pull this into party warfare that makes this more difficult. We want people to understand what is at stake and for them to vote their conscience. And finally, I just want to remind all of us that, yes, this is about abortion. Yes. It's about so much more as well. This is about the fact that since 1912, we have had the freedom to make decisions that affect our daily lives. This is a check on power. This is how we make sure that if the Ohio government is not acting in our best interests, that we ourselves as citizens can do it. And that's why this isn't partisan. This is about protecting a good government standard.
And I think that that point has to be hammered home, you know, because, you know, in politics and in government, turns go round. Right now, it's the Republicans who have the upper hand, but that's probably not going to always be the case. But this provision of the Constitution is going to be a permanent limitation on the ability of the people to put either party in check. And that's the thing I think that we need to put forward. You know, we've been saying it very simply. You know, you tell people that they need to vote no on one on the 8th, you know, and you have to keep hammering that home, but you have to also let them understand that this is a situation where we don't want the losers to be able to win. So, I mean, if you're trying to put together an elevator speech, those would be the two things that I would say.
Thank you. A lot of comments coming in. One major question we're getting, yes, this will be available on our website. It's also available on our Facebook page because we're streaming on Facebook Live. So that's an easy place to share this as well, if you want to share with people. I think we've covered what you can do. Is there anything else you want to add about what we can do in the meantime before August 8th? Besides,
absolutely. I'll start and I'll give it to the honorable judge to close us out. Please make sure you're a member or a donor of the League of Women Voters of Ohio. We literally are in every community of the state distributing signs, distributing materials, making sure that voters know that their rights are on the line, doing media interviews. And we could use all the, doing postcard parties, texting voters. We could use all the support that we can get. Make sure you participate in Mind Plus Nine. That's the easiest thing you can do, is contact nine of your folks and ask them to contact nine of their folks. You can write a letter to the editor. We think that's really great to hear everyday people talking about why they're opposed. Something simple, please be a poll worker. We know that our boards of elections are struggling to get poll workers. A lot of folks are on vacation. Follow us on social media and share that. Right now, the number one goal is making sure the voters know that there's no election and making sure that they are understanding that their rights are on the line. Our strategy is simply to tell voters the truth about what this would do and how this is going to harm our ability, our freedom to pass policies that have and will continue to improve our daily lives in Ohio.
It's hard to add too much to that. I mean, the recognition that people need to have is that this election is going to turn on turnout. And if the people who are opposed to this get to the polls, then it will lose. If it loses, there will be a number of things that will probably bubble up as a result of the fact that it lost, and will be put in a position where, because of the fact that we preserved our right to do initiative petitions, will put us in a better position to be able to reform government in the future. So people just need to understand that this is probably one of the most seminal elections that have taken place in Ohio, certainly in this century, but probably in the century since this thing was passed. And that if they fail to go to the polls, they really will have no one to blame other than themselves when bad things happen.
Thank you, Judge. Jen, they're asking about yard signs. How do we get yard signs?
God love them and yard signs. Okay, right now I'm going to be honest with y'all. My focus is getting them into places where we don't have a lot. We are more saturated in Cuyahoga County and Franklin County and Hamilton County and Montgomery County. So, but you can check with your local league. You can check with the local Democratic Party. Just know that I'm squirreling mine away. I just found out yesterday that Mercer County didn't have any, right? Mm-hmm. And so if I'm going to choose, I'm going to choose those rural areas just to make sure that we get folks out. But yard signs is just one thing. Keep in mind that actually a yard sign is probably not as effective as contacting your friends and families personally. It's just as effective to write a letter to the editor. It's just as effective, if not more, to share posts on social media. So, but thank you for your interest in yard signs, and check with the local league or the Democratic Party. The campaign itself is out.
Providing information on social media is huge. You know, that's the way a huge proportion of younger people get their votes. The point is that if people don't understand this issue, the way that it's postured, it's arcane and hard for people to grasp. So messaging is really important. A number of outfits are really working on the messaging aspect of this. There is a no campaign, and if you go online you can find that. Donating to the League of Women Voters as well as to the no campaign, I think, are both good things you can do, but giving time to them to do some phone banking or to do postcard parties or anything like that that gets the word out. This is all about turnout, and we have to make sure that if we really want people to have a full understanding, they have to first understand that this is coming up with a quickness. We are talking about now less than a month before that decision is made.
Thank you. And voting early is open now.
Yes.
Well, thank you, yeah. Jen, and thank you, Judge Adrian, and thank you everyone who participated with your comments and your questions. I really have appreciated and enjoyed this discussion today. Thank you all for being here, and have a great afternoon. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
My name is Donnie Blatt. I'm the director in District 1. We represent tens of thousands of members in Ohio. We make glass and oil in Toledo. We make steel in Cleveland and Canton. We make tires in Akron and Findlay. We have foundries in Youngstown. We represent energy in Piketon, and we represent utilities right here in Cincinnati. Woo. We also represent a lot of public sector around the state, and we have a lot of other sectors that we represent in between what I just described. Now, everybody else here has said why issue one is so bad. And we all have to agree with that, right?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Issue one is the biggest lie that was ever perpetrated on the citizens of the state of Ohio in the history of this state. And we can never let our politicians bold-faced lie to us and get away with it. We can't stand for that. So let's just talk a little bit about the lie. The lie that this will protect our Constitution and keep special interests out of our state constitution. While they're cashing a check from a billionaire from Illinois to fund this campaign. Let's talk about the lie that it should be hard to change the Constitution. And we should have to go through 88 counties to get signatures instead of 44. That has nothing to do with protecting our Constitution, has everything to do with taking away your voice. Let's talk about the 10-day cure period. What does that have to do with protecting our Constitution? Nothing more than to take away your voice. And the lie, raising the standard to 60% plus one to protect the Constitution. While they try to pass this, not under that standard, under the 50% plus one standard. Yeah. A bold-faced lie to the citizens of this state. And then let's talk about the hypocrisy. The hypocrisy of the August election, right? As we said earlier, banned just months earlier, August election because of low voter turnout. Well, you know what? They made a mistake. This August election will be the biggest damn election we ever had in this state in office. They also made a mistake by taking us on.
That's right.
They took us on in 2011. Steel workers were out there to protect collective bargaining rights for the public sector employees. And make no mistake about it. If they get this passed, they're going to come after our collective bargaining rights for every sector in this state. They're going to come after your workers' compensation. They're going to come after your unemployment compensation. And they're going to reduce it all. That's their plan.
That's right.
And we're not going to make that. We're going to make sure that does not happen in this state.
That's right.
We won't stand for it. Steel workers won't sit out idly by and allow this to happen. We're going to get out there and work our ass off. So we got to get out. We got to get our brothers, our sisters, our mothers, our fathers, our grandparents, your aunts, your uncles, your cousins, your next door neighbor, the guy that sells the ice cream, the bus drivers. Anybody that you know, drag their ass to the polls.
Hola, comunidad latina de Ohio. Hello, Latin community of Ohio. Latinos across Ohio are uniting to vote no on issue 1, August 8, 2023. Latinos de todas partes de Ohio, nos estamos uniendo para votar no en issue 1, el 8 de agosto. ¿Por qué? Why? Please listen to the reasons Latinos of all ages and different Latino countries of origin are voting no. Favor de escuchar las razones que los Latinos de todas edades y países de origen van a votar no.
Hello, my name is Eileen Jimenez-Cobbs, and I am in Cincinnati, Ohio, Mexican-American, and I am voting no on issue 1 on August 8th. There are three things that are most important to me. That is safety, wages, and taxes. Currently, on the ballot, on 2024, there will be the minimum wage issue and the ability to increase minimum wage to $15. There's also the Buckeye Firearm Association. Access to firearms and the control of firearms is important for the safety of myself and my family. For all Ohioans, it is important that we continue to uphold our democracy and uphold the sacred principle of the one person and one vote. My voice matters. Your voice matters. Vote no on August 8th.
Hola, mi nombre es Evelyn Rivera. Soy puertorriqueña y vivo en Cleveland, Ohio. Y yo voy a votar no en issue 1 el 8 de agosto porque amo la comunidad latina. Pienso que si pasa este issue, perjudicaría nuestra comunidad latina y todos los ciudadanos de Ohio porque va en contra la Constitución de Ohio que tiene más de 110 años de existencia. Por favor, voten no en issue 1. Gracias.
Soy Gladys Santiago en Cleveland. Soy puertorriqueña, nacida y criada aquí en Cleveland, Ohio. And I'm going to go into English. The reason why I'm voting no on issue 1 is because politicians need to stay out of my pocketbook. Politicians decide on how much our food costs, our fuel costs, and our fun. Even the taxes on the phone and the surcharges on the phone you're using now to view this message, they set the policy. Latinos are the only growing population in Ohio, and we continue to be ignored. Why? Because we're not voting. You can complain to each other, or you can go and hit no on issue one so that we get to say, not that majority that they're trying to push, but that the people get to say how things will go.
My name is Ariana Mosquera. I'm 23, and I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. I'm voting against issue one because I don't want my voice to get taken away. Issue one is going against so much of what makes decisions in this country fair for everyone. I want real equality and fairness for Ohio, and I know that won't happen if issue one gets passed.
My name is Armando Tellez. I'm a Chicano that resides in Columbus, Ohio. And I'm encouraging the support to vote no on issue one on August 8th. This is an attempt by the supermajority to silence the voters and the people of Ohio. This is an attack on democracy nationwide. Whenever a supermajority chooses not to have a balanced government, but instead to silence people and to make arbitrary decisions for themselves. So we as the people must stand. We as the people must show up on election day. So we encourage you, vote no on August 8th for issue one.
Soy Lourdes Rivera, presidente de LULAC Cincinnati. Tengo un mensaje importante para ustedes. Si queremos proteger nuestros derechos de hacer decisiones que impactan nuestro futuro, tenemos que votar no a issue one, agosto 8.
My name is Alicia Pagan, and I'm state director for LULAC, Ohio, but I'm also a classroom teacher here in Ohio. And my classroom is very important to me. My students are very important to me. It is the ability to let our legislators know whether or not we agree with their legislation, whether or not we agree to the changes they're bringing to our classrooms, to our community tables. Vote no on issue one maintains our ability to be able to address the things that we agree with or disagree in our community. Vote no on issue one to maintain your voice for our community. Es muy importante que votamos no el 8 de agosto. Soy maestra y es importante que el voz de mis estudiantes, de mi comunidad, tiene un espacio para nuestra comunidad. It is so important. That's why on August 8th.
Por favor, voten no el 8 de agosto para nuestra comunidad latina.
Labor rights folks have wondered aloud if restricting access to the ballot initiative process might make it easier to attack collective bargaining. Suppose the legislature were to make Ohio a so-called right-to-work state, in spite of a majority of people in Ohio opposing such a policy. Citizens might then want to place an initiative on the ballot that would guarantee the right to organize in Ohio, but if issue one passes, it would prevent that. Environmental protection advocates wonder if issue one would hamper their efforts at conservation. The legislature recently passed a widely unpopular bill opening up all public lands in the state, including state forests and parks, to oil and gas drilling and fragging and mining and the like. Suppose folks wanted to amend the state constitution to ban extractive or destructive commercial activity on public lands. Issue one would make that nearly impossible. Folks have been trying to push for local environmental bills of rights ordinances that would allow cities to restrict toxic waste disposal or fracking within city limits. But the legislature has countered with measures that strip cities of their abilities to pass such laws under the rubric of so-called home rule. A constitutional amendment giving greater authority to cities and towns and villages to protect public health in that way might resolve the problem, but if issue one passes, that would be a nearly insurmountable feat. And lastly, a majority of Ohioans in poll after poll favor sensible gun control laws, yet the legislature has moved in exactly the opposite direction, making Ohio's gun laws far more permissive. A constitutional amendment stipulating the authority of cities and towns to adopt local gun ordinances might be in keeping with the majority's will, but if issue one is adopted, that becomes a kind of a pipe dream. Time and again, the gerrymandered, Republican-dominated legislature has acted against the will of the majority of Ohioans and has occasionally even broken or ignored the law. Maybe issue one isn't just about reproductive rights or public health or collective bargaining or gun reform, but is in the end about safeguarding the Ohio legislature's tradition of impunity and its increasing abdication of even the pretense of representing Ohioans. Most people I know are voting no on issue one, and many have done so already early voting at their county board of elections. The election is officially on Tuesday, August 8th, and I hope you'll study the issue and make your voice heard on Tuesday, August 8th. Well, you can hear my voice here on Conscious Voices, heard each week at this time in your community radio stations, WCRSLP 92.7 and 98.3 FM, and WGRNLP now at 91.9 FM in Columbus, Ohio. I'm Evan Davis, and I'll be with you again next week for another edition. Take care.